The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. So today we're going to have a focus kind of on trusts for a variety of reasons. We've always gotten trust questions that come into the show on a regular basis. We've been holding off, hoping to clean some of those up with a guest estate planning attorney on the show. We don't have that today, but we've had a little bit of a flurry of trust questions come in. Thought we should address a few of them and use this as an opportunity to let everybody know that we are really close to having that estate planning attorney that's going to be joining us as a team member on the show here, kind of like what Pete used to do for us in the past. Those of you who are longtime listeners, I'm sure remember Peter Scott, who provided his estate planning wisdom from time to time on the show. And Pete finally retired, and we've been searching for an adequate replacement. Adequate is probably the right word, not to dismiss the expertise of anyone else we bring on here, but Pete's left some big shoes to fill, if you will. He was had special knowledge in the areas of both estate planning and tax planning, which is a wonderful combination for retirement planning overall. So we're going to get into some trust topics today. Jim might be able to share a little bit more about our upcoming estate planning attorney guest that's going to be joining us at some point in the not too distant future. But I'll unmute Jim's mic and he can chip in anything else he'd like to share there, and then let us know what topics we're going to deal with from related to listeners' questions in the area of trusts.
Yeah, this is really kind of, folks, a continuation of the Q&A show we did last week, where we had the new question of the week, which did involve a trust. The gentleman reached out to us and gave us a lot more information. So I thought I would share that with a lot of listeners. I know a lot of people listen to the shows continually, so now would be the time to do that. And then we received a few questions in the past regarding trusts. As beneficiaries of IRAs, not just trusts in general, trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. So that's kind of going to be the topic on today's show. I'm going to use the two emails that I did receive as part of the basis of today's presentation. But we also want to go over some of the basics of using a trust as beneficiary of an IRA. Longtime listeners, you'll know Chris and I are not a fan of them, not as beneficiaries of IRAs. It's not to say that there's never an appropriate time to use them, but I often think or consider using a trust as beneficiary of an IRA is like using using something big for something small. Oh, no, something complex for something easy.
That's probably
give me a good analogy.
That's probably the best way to describe it. It's really, in most cases, an overcomplication, which whenever you do that in planning, retirement planning specifically, I think you just open yourself up to more things going wrong. You know, why take the complicated route when a more straightforward route will likely do what you really want to do? If there's very specific reasons to take the complicated route, that you can justify the complication, the costs involved, go for it. You know, there are times when complication is needed to achieve what you're trying to do. But if you can't clearly identify the justification for this complication, don't go there. You're just opening yourself up. And the big trouble with estate planning, which is what we're talking about here, these are things that are going to happen after you're gone. You're not around to fix it. You're not there to maybe share your intentions, you know, and walk people through this complex thing that you left behind. And even though you're gone and won't experience the trauma, you're leaving behind a mess for somebody. So, you know, it's simple is better when possible, I guess would be the mantra here.
The old KISS mantra, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And trusts are anything but simple. They sound simple, and to you do-it-yourselfers, that can sometimes be the death knell, if you will. You understand it now in your 40s, 50s, 60s. The question is, will you understand it in your 70s, 80s, and 90s? Or will your spouse, who may not be as into everything that you are, understand it? Or what if you don't die? What if you're now disabled? Maybe mentally disabled, can't make a decision anymore. You have Alzheimer's, a dementia. Are your children or other agents under your POA going to be able to step in and understand everything you were trying to do? Trusts add so much complexity there. They are not a set it and forget it solution. There really is nothing that's a set it and forget it solution. Let me make that clear. But trusts need to be looked at all the time. And that's where a lot of people drop the ball. And sadly, a lot of estate planning practices drop the ball on that. They create a trust and they may not contact the clients again for years. Pete often shared with us that that was a issue, and he freely acknowledged it in the industry, his industry, that the attorneys were never really good at following up and getting clients to come back in on a regular basis. Now, there's a lot of law firms out there that are excellent on that. So I'm not throwing all the firms under the bus here at all by any stretch. And there's a lot of financial planning firms that are excellent on keeping abreast of what their clients are trying to do and helping their clients review their estate plans. Now, granted, financial planners are not estate planning attorneys, but they can assist on basics and point the client in right directions when things go wrong. But again, that doesn't happen all the time. So even though you may understand trusts now, you may not in the future. But sadly, there are, I think, some perhaps financial planners or perhaps estate planning attorneys or a little bit of both, who use a lot of complexity when something simple could have been done instead. And it is, you get far more money as an attorney producing a trust than you would producing a simple will. And that word simple is anything but. Attorneys tell me that all the time. But it is generally easier and more efficient, therefore cheaper, for a client to utilize a person, not a client, I'm sorry, to utilize a will than it would be for a trust. A trust adds complexity. Complexity takes time. Time is money for attorneys because they bill by the hour. So you have to keep a lot of this in mind. And oftentimes, again, Chris, I just see people using a very complex structure to do something that could have been quite easy. Or they're relying on something that doesn't quite work the way they think it works. And I think a lot of that has to go with perhaps miscommunication between the law firm and the client that they're trying to help, or the law firm did communicate correctly, but the client just doesn't understand what it is. Or they might understand it, Chris, that day. 6 months later, they're starting to forget it. 6 years later, they have no clue why they did it. One of the first things I always like to do when I see a trust involved in a client situation is I ask them, well, you can answer that question, Chris. What's the first question you ask when you see a trust?
Why do you have this? Have them describe in their own words what they what their goal was in accomplishing this. Same question we ask if someone shows up, and I'm not trying to change the conversation here, but if they have an annuity, ask them, why do you have this? What was it meant to accomplish? And in both cases, the trust and the annuity case, I think it's about 20% of the time that someone can clearly verbalize why they have it beyond just someone told me I should have it kind of a situation, which doesn't mean there's not a good reason. Maybe they just don't remember the reason or, I just want to make sure people understand what they have, why they have it, and that it still makes sense to continue doing it that way. And simply because someone told me to do it is not the end of the conversation. That doesn't mean, oh, okay, somebody told you to do it, let's just stick with that. Investigation is needed to discover if they don't know the answer right off the top of their head. So that's the number one question on both trusts and annuities.
Correct. And Chris is right on that. Annuities add a whole level of complexity as well. So as a firm, it's pretty standard practice for us to always ask clients who have an annuity or have a trust, begin with explaining to us, why do you have them? And then from there, we can begin to evaluate if they still make sense or if they need to get in front of the attorney or the agent who sold them the product and start improving it or getting it better, because laws always change, especially on the trust side. Annuities are a contractual obligation between you and an insurance company. They work a little differently. But on the trust side, Chris, laws change constantly and trusts need to be monitored, especially when they're beneficiaries of IRAs. So we've talked about many of this in the past, but if you're a newer listener or if you're a longtime listener, you may have forgotten some of this. Let's go under a few concepts with trusts as beneficiaries of an IRA. First, the trust is the beneficiary of the IRA. They are not the owner of the IRA. If you ever, ever, ever title an IRA as such that the trust is the owner, you just blew up the entire IRA. So keep that in mind. You don't put an IRA inside the trust. The IRA stays outside of the trust. The trust will be beneficiary of the IRA and receives money from the trust. It will not own the IRA. If you do it that way, it's an immediate distribution of the entire IRA. Now, the good news is most custodians are not going to let you, Chris, mistitle that, and they'll hopefully pick up on it. Mm-hmm. But I can't say all of them will, and you could be in a lot of trouble there. Well, everybody thinks because they heard, you got to put assets inside a trust. Make sure you retitle your home to your living trust. Make sure you retitle your collectibles, your gold, your land, whatever it is you're trying to manage through a living trust, and you retitle it to the trust. If you retitle an IRA to the trust, you just blew it up. You do not do it that way. The trust is beneficiary of the IRA. Now, there's a problem with that, Chris. And the big problem is a trust is not what?
It's not a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not a human. So that causes a bunch of problems, even if you have human beneficiaries of the trust. In other words, the trust is going to receive assets and then pass it out to beneficiaries per the terms of the grantor of the trust, the person who established the trust or funded the trust. The problem is a trust, though, is not human at all. So you run into a host of issues when you have a non-human beneficiary of an IRA. Longtime listeners will know if you have a non-human, the IRA has to be liquidated within 5 years of death of the IRA owner, unless the IRA owner died after their required beginning date, which is April 1st of the year following the year they turn 72, then you can use the remaining life expectancy of the IRA owner if it's a non-human. But it gets different if you start to use a trust in this situation. So what does a trust need, Chris, to, even though it's a non-human, what does it need to do to avoid that compacted five-year payout, depending on when the IRA owner died, but that compacted payout, if you will? What elements does the trust need?
Well, it needs four key elements to these trusts, and this is where you're going to want to make sure ahead of time this is going to qualify. Otherwise, after you're gone, things are going to get really messy. But the number one thing is it has to be valid under state law. The trust has to be irrevocable upon death, so it can't be changed after you pass away. It has to have beneficiaries that are identifiable. You have to be able to see through that trust and identify all the beneficiaries specifically when you pass away. So there can't be any vagueness like future grandchildren or anything like that in there. It's got each of these individuals has to be identifiable when you pass. And then the last one that seems to burn a lot of people because they didn't leave good instructions behind, or the person administering everything, their estate and handling things, didn't know the rules. But the last one that has to happen is the documentation, the trust, a copy of it has to go to the IRA custodian by October 31st of the year following the death of the IRA owner. All four of those have to be true and valid on this trust for it to be treated for distribution purposes like a person, like a human. It doesn't become a human, but at least it gets, you can treat it for distribution purposes on the IRA as if it were a person, if all four of those are true.
Correct. And if they're not true, as Chris said, you start to run into some trouble. So that, again, is a very, very, very basic outline of trusts. But when would you use a trust? Why would you want to use a trust? And here's, go ahead.
Well, I assume that wasn't rhetorical. So I was
going to
answer, but
you
can go ahead. I was going to say, I like your response always to that question, which is, do you need protection and or control? You know, that's when you might consider a trust after you pass away. Different reasons than a living trust, which so many of you have. That, most of the time, is for efficiency purposes and for avoiding probate at your passing. But for protection and control issues, either or both, that's when a trust that survives you after death might be applicable.
And there's where you're going to run into some issues, folks, with trusts. So most of the time, people are going to use them specifically for protection and control. You can use them for estate tax mitigation, but it doesn't work with IRAs, as I'll get into and explain, especially with regard to a listener question. But for the most part, people are going to use these, a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, because they're looking to protect and they're looking to control their assets. Let's just assume they cross all their T's and dot all their I's. They have all those three elements. And let's also assume the trustee of the trust at the death of the IRA owner does get the proper documents by October 31st of the year following death to the IRA custodian. So everything was done right. And your trust passes muster and qualifies to be beneficiary of an IRA. If that happens, pre-Secure Act, it was a big deal. Why was it a big deal, Chris?
Well, the treatment for persons was that long stretch that you could get if it qualified to be treated as a person. So the difference between that and the five-year rule was extreme. You know, you could have a multi-decade payout compared to 5 years, and that was a huge difference, very important. Well, now that stretch for non-spouse beneficiaries has been compacted to only 10 years. So now we're only talking about a 10-year versus 5-year difference.
Correct. So if you're looking to protect and control and you have everything in order, and most of you are going to leave it for children, so you have children, you're protecting and controlling assets that you have, you're told, well, you should create a trust, pass those assets to your children through a trust, and you can get that protection and control easily because the trust will hold those assets from the IRA that pass out and kind of act as a one-way valve, if you will, an intermediary between the IRA payout and the beneficiary, your child, that you want to get it. That's one reason, and probably the more common reason, that trusts are going to be used. We're not going to go any deeper than that. But there's a problem there, folks. A couple of issues. First, after the passage of the Secure Act in January of 2000, we've had no guidance, none yet, from the IRS on how they are going to treat trusts. Will they treat them under the same rules and approach pre-Secure Act, when you could have a stretch? Or are they going to do things different post-Secure Act, when essentially for most non-spouse beneficiaries, not all, there's a few exemptions, there is no more stretch? We don't know yet. So right now, and again, I study under the Ed Slot Group, as a lot of people know, the approach they're taking is what the rules were of pre-Secure Act will most likely be the same, or at least be accepted post-Secure Act. I'm sending this little caveat out there, Chris, because the IRS might release tomorrow, for all we know, things that blow everything we're saying today out of the water.
Yeah, and sometimes they do come out of left field and change things, and we all have to react to it. So it's always possible. I like the logic behind what the Slot Group is saying, that consistency-wise, we expect them to behave post-Secure Act kind of like they did pre-Secure Act. So, but IRS isn't always predictable and 100% consistent. They can suddenly change.
Correct. So follow how this would work then, folks. You're going to have an inherited IRA. The owner dies. The beneficiary is a trust. The trust is just going to sit there. The IRA will be retitled into a beneficiary IRA. That the trust is not going to own the IRA. I told you prior to that, if you're alive and you retitle your trust to own your IRA, it's an immediate distribution. At death, you're just going to create a beneficiary IRA. And the beneficiary just happens to be a trust. And the beneficiary of that trust is a human. So there's a proper way to title it. I'm not going to get into that. Every custodian will know how to title it. They will tell you exactly how they want the title of that to be. And actually, you don't even write the title anymore, folks. You just kind of answer a few questions on the application, and the custodian will actually title the IRA for you. So you don't even have to know the titling anymore. So what would happen is you have a beneficiary IRA set up, and it sits there holding the money. You have a trust waiting to receive the money. If you created a trust for protection and control, that means you want that IRA to pay into the trust and that trust to perhaps hold the money, because you want to protect it and control it from going to your children. Why would you want to protect it? Maybe the child's going through a divorce. Maybe they're being sued. Maybe they're a spendthrift and you don't want the money to go through to them. There can be any number of reasons. They have special needs and it can't be passed on to them. There can be many reasons why you would not want money from an IRA to go directly to a child. So you're going to pay it into the trust first. The trust receives the payouts as they come. Long time, not even long time listeners, recent listeners, if you've been paying attention, there are no RMDs anymore after inheriting an IRA. The only RMD, I guess you could say, is the entire IRA has to be empty by the 10th year after death of the owner. So that IRA sits there, Chris, for 10 years. You do not have to force money out under the new rules that allows the trustee to request money to come out of the IRA. The trustee is the person who's managing the trust for the benefit of the beneficiary. And the trustee can request money and it gets paid into the trust. Then the money either sits there or the trustee passes it to the child. If there's no reason to protect and control it, everything looks good. The trustee just lets that money pass out from the IRA into the trust, from the trust to the beneficiary. And the beneficiary pays the taxes. The trust will do a trust tax return. It will declare that money from the IRA as income. Because remember, folks, you should know this by now. Your money in your IRA, all you Vanguardians, you look at your IRA, you think you have assets. The IRS looks at it and says, what do you have, Chris?
Income.
Income. Income with respect to a decedent. So when that money passes from the IRA into the trust, it's income. So your trust will still do a tax return and declares that money as income. But then they're going to take a DNI. Deductible net income. Isn't it? Net income isn't DNI, the deductible net income, yeah. So Google that just to make sure. Trust DNI, trust, deductible, yeah. Net income. Okay. So what they do is they say,
distributable
net income. I knew something.
I knew
wrong
it was. Yeah,
that.
I knew that was off a little bit, but I couldn't remember. Yeah, distributable.
Yeah, it's like, that doesn't sound right. Google it. Distributable net income. What does all that mean? The trust will do a tax return, folks. Declare $100,000 as income, but also declare that we distributed that net income to the beneficiary. So the trust owes a whopping zero. If they received $100,000 and distributed $100,000 of income, remember, all money from an IRA is considered income. So you have $100,000 of income goes into the trust. $100,000 of income is distributed, distributable net income, DNI. That's a deduction the trust gets. Trust pays no taxes. Taxes are owed by the child inheriting it. Okay, all that sounds nice and smooth and wonderful. What happens, Chris, if you're doing a trust for protection and control, and all of a sudden the trustee is like, oh my goodness, I can't pass this money on to that child. I've got to hold this money. The grantor, the creator of the trust, the person who owned the IRA and died, whichever verbiage you want to call them, specified that the child should not get money if this, that, and the other thing was happening, and that is happening. So now that $100,000 sits inside that trust. That's what you created it for, Chris, protection and control. What now happens?
Well, since you held it in there, there's not that distributable net income. So the trust gets to file a tax return and pay income taxes at those really special trust rates for that income that it just received and kept.
And that essentially, do you know what the limit is this year? Is it, you had it on a few shows ago. Is it 13?
I've got it. No, I've got it right here in my handy dandy little reference folder. I should have pulled this out before you said
something.
You
should have pulled it ahead of time. Yeah. That would have been good on live recorded
radio. Estates
and
trust, here it is, $13,450 for 2020.
I couldn't find that in your Apple Music library. You can ask me to play a radio station or ask for your music on a different app.
Nice job, Jim.
I'm just talking, and Siri all of a sudden is. It said can't find that on my Apple Music. What the hell is it looking for?
It heard you ask it something, so you should probably turn that off.
I don't know how to.
Or throw the iPad in another room.
I can't. This is my fancy.
Oh, you're reading. You're reading.
Yes, I'm reading off my fancy dancing new iPad, anyway, and now it's talking to me. I have no idea.
It's $13,450 is the limit at to hit the top 37% bracket. Although you hit the 35 bracket at $9,850, so. I'd say at $10,000 of income, things start to get ugly when you've got a trust reporting that income.
So in short, folks, what this all means for everybody creating a trust for protection and control of their IRA assets, when the money pays into it and is not passed out, if it's passed out, there's no problem. The trust declares it as income. Why do they declare it as income? IRA assets or 401k, TSP, 403bs, whatever the case may be, is considered income. It is income with respect to a decedent, IRD. It's always going to be income, no matter what. So the trust gets it, and as long as they pass it out, they get that distributable net income deduction. The trust pays no taxes. But the minute you hold IRA money inside the trust, it is all income. So it's going to be taxed as income. And trusts will pay the highest current marginal income tax bracket. So in the future, as the brackets go up, these will go up as well. At just $13,000 and change. I can't remember what Chris said because my iPad started talking to me.
Yeah, no, it's $13,450.
So in the case of $100,000 going in, the first $13,450 is taxed in much more compressed brackets. I think the overall general tax rate of that first $13,400 is like 25%. But everything above that, $13,451 and above, is taxed at the current highest federal marginal bracket. Plus state taxes. So depending on what state you're in, that'll be on top of that. If you're in California, that could be an outrageous amount, or Illinois or Connecticut or New York. These can be very, very, very high rates. So using a trust for protection and control gets messy. Each year that the IRA pays out money to the trust, and the longest you're going to get is for a non-spouse beneficiary or a non-eligible designated beneficiary is going to be 10 years. Each year that the money pays out, it's going to be taxed at very high rates. So the cost of your protection and control, folks, is you're going to lose, or your beneficiaries are going to lose, substantial amounts, 40, 45, 50 plus percent of your IRA will be lost to taxes. That's the cost of protection and control on your IRA. So you might be saying, well, Jim, I don't need that. I just want to pass it all on to my kids. Okay, then I would say, why do you need a trust? If you're just going to pass it on to your kids, let your kids inherit it and let your kids start taking it out over that 10-year period. If you want to protect those assets, though, you're only got the 10 years to protect them because that entire IRA has to be paid out within 10 years. So you could make a trust discretionary, I agree, and pass it out each year for 10 years if the child doesn't need it, and then the kid gets to pay the taxes at their lower tax brackets. I agree with all of that. But the minute your trustee has to protect that money, Chris, and he or she stops it from going out, that's when you're going to start losing 40, 50 plus percent of the IRA because it's being held in the trust. So that's why Chris and I are not a fan of it. There's other strategies we prefer over that. Okay. Here's where it starts to get a little bit interesting, though, with trusts. And it has to do with the question we got last week. A gentleman was thinking of not necessarily using the IRA for protection and control. For those who don't remember, it was the person who had no children, but wanted to leave his IRA and 401k, I believe he had both, to 10 plus, so it could be 11, could be 100, we don't know, 10 plus humans and charities. Remember that, Chris?
Yeah, so it was a whole bunch of different beneficiaries. Yep.
So he was looking for simplicity. He was thinking, hey, rather than trying to have a beneficiary form, which he conceded in an email back to me that I'll read in a second, he conceded would be pretty damn easy and wouldn't involve the attorney and all the costs, which he also admitted he never thought of. He did say he thought it would be easier just to have to name one trust on the IRA or 401k beneficiary form than having to maintain 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 names on the beneficiary form. But what he wasn't factoring in, and before I get deep into that, from that standpoint, using a trust could be beneficial, and I think every attorney would agree with that, until you start adding some complex layers to it. But at face value, Chris, naming one trust as beneficiary of an IRA, you have no children. Mm-hmm. He had agreed or told us his spouse was primary beneficiary, so that was right. Trust was contingent, what he called secondary. So the wife would inherit it, no problem, correct, Chris? Because she is a spousal beneficiary.
Right.
So no problem. She inherits the IRA, the 401k. And then at her death, the account pays into the trust, and the trust is set up to distribute all the money to the children, the humans and the charities. That's why he set the trust up. At face value, I think you would agree, that is a viable alternative or a viable use of a trust.
Yeah, although in particular, and he copied me on the email, so I picked up on one other thing he mentioned, is that he has many IRAs and 401ks, which if you're managing 10, 15 beneficiaries at 9 different accounts, that's a lot, where the trust would become even more attractive as one place to keep track of all the beneficiaries. And then all of those different accounts flow into the trust if the spouse isn't there. They're all set up as contingents. But that would be even more justification in my mind if you had multiples of these accounts that you would have to be listing and keeping track of the 10-plus beneficiaries at all these different custodians and plan administrators. That's kind of burdensome. I could see that, as long as you're okay with the downsides and burdens and costs of the trust, which we all know, even though it's maybe kind of a pain, updating your beneficiary designation form is free. Making changes to the trust, not free, and not charged at a real attractive rate in most cases, since attorneys are relatively highly paid.
Right. And when I read that part as well, I started thinking, why are you having that? It's okay now, perhaps, at his age, but it's so much easier to consolidate and not have to deal with multiple custodians, multiple accounts, multiple RMDs. Remember, 401ks always have to have their own RMD taken from them. Mm-hmm. IRAs, you can consolidate. You can have multiple IRAs, but take an RMD from one of them equal to the RMD of all of them. But you can't do that with 401ks. Each 401k has to have its own RMD. But to me, for simplicity's sake, consolidating at one custodian, especially listeners in general, if you become incapacitated and your spouse, who may not be as active in this, is trying to step in, or worse, children under the power of attorney are trying to step in and manage all your accounts, and they're going to be, oh my God, why did Tad have 6 different accounts? This is nuts. So keep an eye on that. I agree. And his rationale, as he explained it to us, made more sense. Okay, he's got all these accounts. It's going to be easy to maintain one trust, handle the beneficiaries at that level. I'll agree there. And the reason, listeners, this isn't going to be an issue tax-wise, the money is just going to pretty much be a conduit, Chris. It's going to pay into the trust and immediately be distributed by the trustee out. So the IRA money would probably be distributed within the first year, pay straight out, and go to the humans and the charities. At least that's how I understood it. Did you understand it the same?
I do. And he was only using that as a simple way to keep track of beneficiaries in one spot at the trust instead. It wasn't meant for protection and control.
Okay. So let me read a little bit, starting from the middle of his email. I'm not going to start from the beginning, but I do want to thank this listener. He did say some very nice things about us at the start of the email. So Chris and I both thank you. Okay. He says, the reason we created our see-through trust is to help the trustee not hurt them. In fact, I thought listing the beneficiaries in the trust would be helpful, since everything is technically in one place. So Chris and I fully agree with that. And it would be easier, I think, instead of having to deal with multiple beneficiary forms. So we'll concede that. We'll put that in the checkbox of, trust wins there, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I'm very concerned about the punitive taxes, but maybe should be more concerned about the administration costs of the estate. I'm not concerned with what he's calling punitive taxes, which anybody who understands trust taxation knows. If you hold that money in the trust, I would put it in the punitive category. But it's going to pass out right away. So if you pass it out, if the trustee passes it out the same year, make sure the trustee doesn't miss the year. Don't receive it in the year of death. And it's kind of late. I'm going on vacation. I'll distribute it next week, even though it's the new year. That would be horrendous. But if, as long as he distributes or she distributes the money within that tax year, there's not going to be any punitive taxes. Do you agree there, Chris?
Punitive from what we know, trust taxes. Right, yeah. From what we know, that doesn't seem to be the case.
But he did say, but maybe should be more concerned about the administration of the state. Jim brought up some great points because he is so smart, and I wish I was as smart as him.
He didn't say that. I just told you I got a copy of the email. You can't pull that.
I forgot. I did that so smooth, though. Damn, I forgot you had a copy.
I would have known too. Nobody talks like that.
Some people would.
I don't think so.
All right. Jim brought up some great points about the cost of settling through the trust. My trustees are family members, but I have instructed them to see an estate attorney for assistance. Mm-hmm.
Which, let me interpret that. Go spend a lot more money.
Exactly. They're family members. They're probably as old as you are now, listener. Maybe. I don't want to say for certain. They might be younger than you. When you pass away, are they going to have the time? Are they going to have the mental abilities, the inclination, the desire to handle everything that's going to involve? And then they're going to have to go see an attorney. Did you put provisions in the trust that they can be paid for their time and cost? Is that in the trust that they're going to be able to be compensated for doing all this? So these are just things to consider as you have it set up that way. Okay, the beneficiaries will be helpless and will need guidance. I'm not quite sure what he means by that, but I know there's a lot of charities involved here and humans, but he did write the beneficiary will be helpless and will be in need of guidance. I had no idea the mechanics of how an inherited IRA dispersed. How or who creates the inherited IRA, and how the rollovers or distributions happen. I'm going to pause there. He's got his trust, Chris, but he's clueless on how it all works. I'm going to put that on the shoulders of who?
The attorney.
The attorney. I'm going to blame that on the attorney side. It's not up to this listener or you listeners in general to go out now and try to figure out how all this happens. The attorney should have told him how it all happens. I'm guessing this gentleman's a do-it-yourselfer, so he doesn't have a financial advisor, so he didn't counsel with him on how or her on how all this happens. I blame the attorney for that. So let's help him out here a little bit, just as he's saying. I had no idea the mechanics of how an inherited IRA dispersed. They're going to be dispersed no different than if a quote-unquote regular beneficiary wanted money. Someone is going to call the custodian and say, send me some money. The someone that's going to call the custodian is going to be the trustee of the trust, is going to call up and say, distribute the IRA, and the IRA will be distributed. Well, how do you get to that point? So he's asking his next question, how or who creates the inherited IRA and how the rollover or distribution happens? In other words, how does the money move from a traditional 401k a traditional IRA to the inherited IRA, or the traditional 401k to an inherited IRA? They're going to move it all over into an IRA and then distribute. I don't know. Did you get the impression he's doing it that way, Chris? Or did you get the impression, now that I think of it, they don't have to distribute everything to an inherited IRA? I'm trying to think out loud here. No, they would. They would have to put it all into an inherited IRA and then from there into the trust.
Yeah, any of these, because I think you're right, there were some accounts that are still left as 401ks, and they're going to boot them out of there.
But there's something that can be done, actually, now that I'm thinking out loud here. Especially in the case of the 401k, as we pointed out on last week's show, he pointed out, I believe, he was told by the 401k custodian, no, that's not going to work. Non-spouse beneficiary is going to have to close the 401k by December 31st of the year following death, and the money pays out to the beneficiary. Listener, if you have the beneficiary set up the way it is, your wife, and then a contingent is the trust, and your wife inherits it, she will be allowed to keep the 401k open. Now, she's going to have to retitle it, but she's still going to be able to have the 401k open. She would most likely change the beneficiary to the primary beneficiary now that she's taken over ownership, because they will allow her to do that. They won't allow anyone else. So the wife could just name as primary beneficiary, Chris, the trust.
Right.
At her death, the 401k just pays out to the trust. Boom, done. You don't have to move it to an inherited IRA.
You don't have to pay it out. You don't have to, no.
But if you, listener, wanted for some reason or another to keep that 401k sitting there for 10 years, perhaps growing, and only distribute it in year 10, or if you wanted to control the number of distributions, I want this 401k or all my inherited IRA-like assets to be paid out over 10 years. If you don't want the money to go out immediately, that's what's going to add the complexity here, because then you would have to move it to the inherited IRA. He's asking here again, how does it move to the inherited IRA? It doesn't have to, unless he wants that 10-year stretch out, Chris. On any of the accounts, you could have six IRAs and six 401ks. At your wife's death, she's primary. So I'm assuming you die first. You die first, your wife inherits them. She can treat them as her own. She's your spouse. You best hope that she names the trust that you created as the new primary beneficiary. And assuming she does that at her death, those six IRAs and those six 401ks would just pay out totally by December 31st of the year following her death to the trust. And as the trust receives the money, it just disperses it directly to your 10 plus beneficiaries. No problem there, Chris, at all, correct?
Nope, correct.
None. The complexity would begin if for some reason he wants the stretch. Did he indicate in his email? I didn't keep reading. Did you see anywhere where he wanted that stretch?
I don't recall him mentioning that, no.
Yeah. So if you don't want the 10-year stretch, listener, and for the life of me, I don't know why you would want to make a charity wait 10 years to get your money. Right. Yeah. They're going to need it right away. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about the human beneficiaries. If there is a viable or defendable reason why you want their money to be delayed 10 years, okay, you might want to look at that. Or, well, I don't want to get too deep on what you might want to do there, but if that's what you're trying to do, let me know. But if you're not trying to do that, listener, you don't have to have your trustee consolidate anything. All's what's going to happen is the inherited accounts will pay out by December 31st of the year following your wife's death or your death if your wife died first and you were the last one alive. And as each account pays out, Chris, it will be dispersed immediately to get that distributable net income deduction. It'll be paid out immediately in the same tax year to ensure that the taxes are paid by the beneficiaries, not the trust. So his whole second thing here, he doesn't know how the rollovers and distributions happen. There will be no consolidation and rollover in the scenario you described. If you're only creating the trust to make your life easier because you have multiple accounts and you're going to name 10 plus beneficiaries on each account. Chris and I concede and agree the trust will make things easy, but I can see no reason why your trustee is going to have to consolidate everything into one IRA and then distribute it, unless that's what he wants, that protection and control for 10 years.
Yeah, I agree. Could just let it pass through. He's still going to have to manage. They're still going to have to deal with all these distributions coming from all these different places flowing through the trust. So the trustee is going to have some work to do one way or the other. They can all certainly hire out for help, but that's, additional cost and complexity, which we've already talked about the pros and cons of that.
So the reason this isn't going to be an issue is another concept, and that is conduit trust. And we spoke just briefly on that. Chris spoke, and we spoke, me as well, at length about a discretionary trust where the trustee has the ability to all of a sudden stop that trust from passing out money. That's called a discretionary trust. As long as the trustee doesn't activate that switch, though, Chris, we call that a conduit. It's not a pure conduit trust, because a pure conduit trust will never have the ability for the trustee to ever shut it off. My thoughts are here. He could probably get away with just a conduit trust, or he can have a discretionary trust with the ability to turn that conduit on, but he's never given us any reason for protection and control. So another type of trust, listeners, is called a conduit trust. Those have really fallen out of favor because of the Secure Act. If you have a conduit trust, listener, the one thing you better make sure on is the language on your trust. If your language says that required distributions from your IRA or 401k will be paid out to the beneficiaries, that's a conduit trust. If it says may be paid out, that's a discretionary trust. Huge difference in just one word, may or will. Chris, what is the RMDs, though, under the Secure Act?
Yeah, there's only one, and it's in the final year of either the 5 or 10 year period. So it's if your intention was for them to get it over time, you're going to essentially lock things up in there with that wording so that none of them can get it until the final year when the entire thing will then flow out.
Right.
And so that may or may not be what you intend, but make sure you understand the ramifications of that wording, and your estate planning attorney should be able to describe to you the differences in the wording and setting it up.
And that's where a lot of pre-Secure Act, pre-January 1st, right, 2020, conduit trusts were very popular for about 20 years under the old stretch IRA rules. People just wanted to make sure their children stretched the IRA and not blow it. So they would write conduit trust that specified the required minimum distributions will be distributed out to the beneficiaries each year. That works great, Chris, under the old rules, because there are RMDs every single year. And they would just pay right out. If you still have RMD language, though, listener, it's quite possible your beneficiaries are stuck waiting for 10 years. If you say the RMDs will be paid out, there are no RMDs under the Secure Act, except for, as Chris said, year 10. So you might want to make sure your language says that all IRAs must be fully distributed into the trust upon death. And then the trust is to pass those assets out in the same tax year to the beneficiaries. Just want to make sure that that's in there.
Yeah, if you're not trying to do any kind of restriction on the outflow or controlling it in any way, that would be the way to make sure it just cleanly triggers and goes through. And There's an advantage of the trustee on this too, by getting things over with and not having this linger on where they have to manage things for a while, because once all these accounts have been dispersed and run through the trust and are out to the trust beneficiaries, job is done. It's essentially, you know, they can wrap that thing up because there's nothing else ever going to flow into that trust. So there is some advantage to, unless you have a reason not to do it, to get that all distributed and forced out as soon as possible.
Yes. I can't see for the life of me why he would have a discretionary trust from the facts he presented to us, and why he isn't just going to use a conduit. Make sure, though, that you're specifying not RMDs, but the entire account gets distributed. I think that's fine. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. The only other thing I want to tie up is one more quick thing that someone mentioned to us from Illinois. He wrote to us not too long ago, Chris, and says, hey, I live in Illinois, and there is a $4 million estate tax exemption, but there is no portability. And he said, we have a $6 million estate, so I'm going to use a trust to reduce my estate taxes. I don't want to get too deep into what he might or might not be doing, but he's talking about his IRA here. He says, we will use a discretionary trust. He does go on to tell me he's married and he has some kids. We will use a discretionary trust that the kids would not be able to just empty out the IRAs quickly. And the trustee could at least distribute this out over the 10-year period. Okay, so he has a discretionary trust and he's going to pass it out over 10 years. Okay, it's just so the kids don't get it and blow it right away. Okay, no problem with that. Right. He says, with that in mind, assuming I died first, could my IRA first go into a trust for my wife so it will stay out of her estate? Remember, Chris, it's a $4 million exemption. They already got $6 million. So they are going to be subject to $2 million of estate tax in Illinois. Then upon her death, pass that trust to the sub-trusts for the kids. I think that's, I don't want to get too deep into sub-trusts on this case. What he's contemplating isn't really going to work. He's talking about taking an old strategy called the, well, I don't want to say old, it's just not used as much anymore, except in states where they have these low estate tax. It could be called a marital trust or an AB bypass trust. In other words, he's saying, hey, can I take my IRA, leave it to a trust, and assign, he said the estate tax exemption.
Well, let's describe real quick so people understand the problem before we start talking about the cure or the solution. If he just leaves it to his wife, that all of that's now going to be hers at right now $6 million and could grow. Because she doesn't get, there's no portability on his exemption. The money passed to the wife right at the beginning is likely, now I'm not, I don't know the laws of Illinois, but I suspect that there is no estate tax issue leaving it to the wife. But then she only has her $4 million, which means his exemption was lost in this particular case, which is the which is how it worked on the federal side before portability. So here he's kind of dredging up the old thing we used to use for, you know, federal estate tax pre-portability, and that is take advantage of your own personal exemption, but put the, you have to put the money in a trust. You can't leave it to the wife because she's then going to have to fit it under her personal exemption because you don't leave it to her. It's in the trust. She can receive money while she's alive from the trust, and then it's going to end up going to the kids along with her assets that pass with her exemption. So that's essentially the story of kind of what the problem is and what they're trying to cure with this method.
So here's the problem trying to do that with an IRA asset, folks and listener. If you did do that, so let's just keep this simple. Let's say there's $2 million in his IRA. I'm just making that number up. And that just so happens to coincide with the amount of money that he's looking to protect because his wife has a $4 million exemption. They got $6 million total. his $4 million will be lost at his death, so he wants to use some and allow his wife to keep using her four.
Right.
So he thinks, great, I'm going to take my $2 million IRA. I'm not going to give it to my wife.
Right.
I'm going to give it to a trust. It's called a bypass trust. Why? Because it bypasses the estate. So he's, well, yeah, technically it's, that's why they call
bypasses
it a bypass her trust.
Estate.
Yeah, in the estate. So he's thinking, I'm going to put my $2 million IRA into this trust. My wife is not going to own that trust. If the wife doesn't own the trust, it's not included in her estate at her death. So he thinks, I'm going to put my $2 million IRA into this bypass trust, assign my $4 million estate tax exemption in the state of Illinois to it. So it will pass into that trust. It won't be subject to estate taxes at my death. Because my wife doesn't own it, the trust does. At her death, it's not going to be included in her estate. My wife still has her $4 million exemption, and the remaining $4 million of our assets also will pass estate tax-free, Illinois estate tax-free at her death. That's the strategy, folks. Can you see? I'm 99.999999% sure you know what the problem with this is, Chris. What's the problem?
Problem is you're going to lose the advantages of a spouse inheriting the IRA and being able to make it their own and continue stretching out RMDs, or maybe even not start RMDs if they're young enough. It's instead going to be forced out much more quickly. Or if you hold it in there, you're going to have income tax issues at the trust level, which we've already discussed is, you know, super scary, beyond $13,450 a year.
I suspect that's the big problem.
So you've avoided the estate tax issue, but created maybe a bigger issue.
Can you Google real quick what the Illinois estate tax is?
Yeah. You keep talking while I do that.
Okay. Here's the issue, listener. You do that, you can. I don't recommend it. And I don't think any competent estate planning attorney is going to recommend it, because you see assets, the IRS sees income. I say this all the time. All you Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers, you look at your $2 million IRA in this example and you say, oh my God, I got $2 million of these 20 Vanguard funds. Look at these assets. I'm wonderful. This is great. The IRS is sitting there saying, you don't got $2 million in Vanguard. You got $2 million of income that we haven't taxed yet. They don't care what it's in. It could be in Vanguard. It could be in Fidelity. It could be in cash. It could be in real estate. It could be in gold. They don't care. They see $2 million of income. Even if your wife is the only beneficiary of that trust, it's still considered a non-spouse beneficiary. It will have to pay out within 10 years. If it's not done right, it could be in as little as 5 years. It will have to pay out to her in 10 years. So that $2 million goes into that trust. Let's assume no growth. It goes into that trust. Sooner or later, it's going to be subject to the highest income tax bracket plus Illinois' estate income tax. So that could be 39 plus whatever Illinois is. It's not a low tax state. You could be losing 43, 45, 48% of your $2 million. You may not lose it to estate tax, but you're going to lose it to a boatload of income tax.
Yeah, so they have, it's kind of a sliding weird scale with a calculation. But to give you an example, the $6 million estate in Illinois, so the first $4 million estate tax free, that extra $2 million to get to six, that extra $2 million is going to be taxed at 22.8% in Illinois, according to what I just discovered here.
And if Chris is right, we're not estate planning attorneys in Illinois, so that's a pretty steep tax. But so is the income.
But
tax.
It's a one and done type of a situation, and then you're not giving up the spousal, you know, benefits upon the initial passing. When you pass, you got to look at the whole thing. Certainly, this is not look at this in a little narrowly focused assessment. You're going to have to look at your entire situation, income tax and estate tax at both the federal and state level, and coordinate this all together to probably solve for the best possible plan.
The strategy, though, you're describing, listener, of the bypass trust isn't to take $2 million, lose 45% of it, maybe 48% of it to income taxes. And then let's just say you put $2 million in there, and after taxes, you got $1.2 million in there. The whole idea instead would be to get $2 million in there and let it grow. And when your wife dies, it's worth $4 or $5 or $6 or $7 million. I'm being a little facetious here on how much it's going to grow. But you always try to put assets into the bypass trust and then not lose them to income taxes.
Right.
So you would put assets in there that won't lose that. You put cash in there. You put life insurance in there. You put a Roth IRA in there. Why would you leave a Roth IRA as beneficiary of that bypass trust? I would be okay with it with a Roth, folks. Why? Well, a couple of reasons. You put the money from the IRA into the bypass trust. It goes tax-free. It's not considered income. Then that full $2 million is in there and hopefully grows. And hopefully your wife will live a long time after your death. I'm not wishing you die so much earlier than her, but I hope, relatively speaking, she lives a long time after you, and it has a chance to grow to maybe 2.5, 2.8, 3 million. Because she doesn't own it, folks. She doesn't own that she doesn't own that trust. All that growth, especially if it came from life insurance or a Roth IRA, she doesn't own it. It's out of her estate. And the idea, Chris, is to get growth in that bypass trust, not just protect his exemption amount.
So as much possible flows estate tax-free to the kids.
When these were used a lot before federal portability, which is now $11 million, which would easily take care of this couple's problem. But Illinois has their own estate tax that's a lot lower. These trusts were often funded with the fastest growing asset that people could find. So they would fund it with assets that were going to appreciate, to keep all that appreciation out of the remaining spouse's estate. You want to get the appreciation going in the bypass trust. Now, the wife does have access to the money in there. She doesn't have free access to it, but she can receive distributions from that bypass trust if she needs them. But the distributions are very controlled, so there can be no implication that she owns or controls that bypass trust. So she can get money if she needs it. So if you're thinking, oh, God, what if the wife needed it? She can get it.
Yeah,
she'll
so
be
they
able to
set
get
up
it if
the,
she needs it.
With the HEMS, the HEMS, yeah. The health, education, maintenance, and support.
Yeah. So she can get it, Chris. My issue is he'll have $2 million. He puts in, it's now worth $1.2 million. It may not even grow to the previous $2 million before the wife dies. I don't know. You don't want to put an asset in a bypass trust that's going to be nailed with the high trust income taxes. It makes no sense. So it's not going to work. Instead, you should be working with someone who can start doing some Roth conversion analysis. This is a classic example, Chris, of 210 planning. Who are we planning for? Two of you together as a couple, one of you as a widower, none of you. To me, he's planning for the one and the zero here. So perhaps Roth conversions of some of his assets to leave his bypass trust Roth assets, or to hell with even Roth conversions, start looking at a life insurance policy, not a second to die, a single to die on your life and her life, using some of the money in your IRA to cover the premiums and leave the life insurance can also be set up in an islet. So it's also going to be estate tax exempt, if you will. And you can use the proceeds of the islet to cover the income taxes or the estate taxes on the trust. there's all different things you could do.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up too, because it appears that the islet technique works in Illinois for state. Again, we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants a little bit here, and I'm looking up a few random things, but it would be worth investigating to make sure. But that might be a way to reduce the portion of the estate that would be included in this Illinois estate tax situation, carving that off. And, you know, people are saying, well, how do you do that? Well, you're going to shove a bunch of premiums into life insurance inside the islet and see if you can't get some offset there that would help you estate tax-wise. So I think instead of estate tax planning, that's really not the realm of the do-it-yourselfers. Is it impossible to do? Not impossible, but as complicated as retirement planning is and asset management for a do-it-yourselfer, estate planning is a whole nother level. And so I would say it's well worth, especially when you've got, you just admitted you had $6 million, and you making a silly do-it-yourself mistake could end up costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think it makes sense to do some consultation with a talented estate planning attorney that focuses on taxes there in the state of Illinois.
Exactly. And the final thing that I'll say is you don't need to get millions of dollars of life insurance.
Right.
You just need enough life insurance. Life insurance in some situations with estate planning is often used to cover the estate taxes that are going to be owed. So you could also look at it that way. Okay, we live in Illinois. We have $2 million that's going to be subject to estate tax, and you can kind of figure out what it is. Then you would adjust for the potential growth and when you might die, and you might come up with it and say, you know what, we need about $380,000 to make our children whole when they have to pay this big estate tax bill. And in that case, you would get a second to die life insurance policy. And then when you're both you and your wife dies, there's enough liquidity for them to pay the estate tax. You're just kind of taking care of that little last dig, if you will, that Illinois is going to give to you, that little screw in your coffin that they're going to do. So you don't have to go out and buy millions. It's wonderful if you could, and it would be a great way of doing it. But you do not want to leave an IRA to a trust like that because of the crazy tax rates. Yep. All right, listeners, this hopefully was good for you. We're going to wrap this up. But trusts are very, very complicated. Estate planning is very, very complicated. So we're excited to be introducing to you the estate planning attorneys that we're going to be working with. There's probably going to be two of them. And we're going to get at least one of them on the show on a regular basis. And they're going to start answering a lot of these estate planning questions. We'll introduce you to them, give you a good feel for who they are. It's taken us a while to find these people after Peter decided to retire. But this is a huge and important part. Chris and I are not attorneys. We know enough about these concepts to counsel with our clients and our listeners here on the podcast on when you should involve competent legal representation. But Chris, I got to agree with you. This is not the realm of a do-it-yourselfer. Mm-hmm. You may be able to go out and buy a few investing magazines. I haven't seen a book called Estate Planning for Dummies.
Do it yourself. Yeah.
I don't know if that exists. But even if you try to do it yourself, you can't put the legal documents in place. And God, don't get me going on using those online things that allegedly are going to give you all the forms and documents you need. It's not as good as a competent estate planning attorney, anywhere as good. So you need someone who can counsel with you on all of this. But your strategy, listener, in Illinois is not going to work. You do not leave your IRA to one of those bypass trusts to lock in your lost portability amount. It's going to get nailed in taxes.
Yep. Okay. Well, nice. Well, thanks for people who wrote in on these topics. Gives us good stuff to chat about. If you have an idea for an EDU show or a question for the Q&A show, you can send those directly to Jim. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email address, or you can go to our website, jimhelps.com. Use the contact form there. Either one is acceptable. Just make sure in the subject line, you make it clear that you're sending in a question for the podcast here. And yeah, I'm going to go prepare for the blizzard that's about to hit us here in Colorado. The snow has started flying up here.
Wait. It's not a blizzard, folks. We don't have the big... Blizzards are winds, Chris. Just because we're going
to
get
8
to 12 inches of snow. It's not a blizzard. It's not a blizzard, folks. Oh. It's not what you guys on the East Coast just dealt with.
Well, just north of here, it will be a blizzard because when you add the winds of Wyoming to the snow that we're getting here in Colorado, it becomes a blizzard. So
we're close blizzard, to that. But we'll see. We're going to get 8 to 12 inches of snow. So, yes. Is it snowing up there yet?
Yes. Okay. Not hard yet. Not hard, no. Okay. But it has started. The little initial wisps of snow have started. So it's starting to accumulate on the roofs a little bit.
Yeah, the initial wisps, as Chris put it, is falling down here. But everyone else, you enjoy. Thanks for the questions. We do hope to get, as I said, a lot more estate questions answered for you on the EDU show and the Q&A show. So we're looking forward to it.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.